and welcome to OSC's Conversations. I'm Sandy Pastor, Executive Director of Oswego Senior Center, and I'm here with Rush Copley Medical Center. Today I'm here with Chris Crank, who's the Director of Pharmacy, and Catherine Madden, who is a clinical pharmacist over at Rush Copley Medical Center. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Today we're going to talk about the importance of medication management with chronic disease as part of the chronic disease sessions that we've been doing with Rush Copley. But first, I'd like to offer the opportunity for Chris and Catherine to introduce themselves. So, Chris.
Thank you. My name is Chris Crank. I am the Director of Pharmacy at Rush Copley Medical Center. So we are charged with, in a pharmacy in a hospital, with overseeing medication use in that hospital. That includes making sure patients get the most benefit out of those meds. That includes while they're in the hospital, but also more and more we're focusing on that transition to home. So it's important that patients not only get the medications they need in the hospital, but we're able to take the plan that's developed in the hospital and have that be a smooth transition into what's done at home.
Oh, good. So you educate them about what the medications are for and why they should be taking them.
Yes.
And all that good kind of stuff before they go home.
Yes. And part, you know, we're going to have some statistics in terms of how people take their medications later that might surprise some people.
I was surprised. So I will, foreshadowing to come. Catherine?
Hi, I'm Catherine Madden. I'm a clinical pharmacist at Rush Copley Medical Center, and I'm actually the pharmacist who you might see before you go home to go over your new medications and make sure that you do have them for home. You can afford them, you have access to them, because that's one of the important things too, is obtaining your medications that we'll go over as well.
So let's talk about some of those statistics about chronic disease.
There's some quick facts about medication management. 20 to 30% of medications are never filled. That's kind of shocking, but it's true. And 50% after the fact they fill them do not take them correctly. So you have 30% who don't fill their meds, and then 50% who fill them and don't take them correctly. So that's a lot of people.
What happens because of that?
You have progression of your chronic disease, which might lead to other complications down the line, kidney failure, worsening heart disease, strokes.
How about being admitted to the hospital?
That too. And yeah. Yes, exactly. That's what we like to prevent too.
And it looks like it also causes death.
125,000 deaths per year are attributed to people not taking their medications correctly. So yeah, if you don't take your meds and follow your doctor's orders down the line, you know, that can happen.
So what kind of diseases are we talking about when we're thinking about treating chronic disease with medication?
When we talk about chronic disease and medication management, a lot of times we're talking about conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, so high cholesterol, asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or COPD, mm-hmm. heart failure, blood disorders or conditions where you might need a blood thinner long term, okay. as well as conditions like depression and other mental illnesses, as well as cancer.
Right.
So it's really any condition where it's going to be with the patient long term. Usually these are lifelong conditions that need to be managed.
And it's tough because there's a lot of lifestyle changes that have to go along with taking medications. So it's not just taking medications, but making sure that you're changing your diet and you're exercising more and things like that.
And that's a very good statement, because typically, you know, medications are good. They're effective at helping manage the disease state. But often they're a lot more effective, or the treatment of the condition is much more effective if you pair the medication along with the lifestyle modifications like you described.
There's only so much that the medication can do. And if you don't change your lifestyle, you're at risk of adding more medications at higher doses, which can increase side effects. So it's very important to combine the lifestyle changes with the medication.
One thing I noticed when picking up medications for myself or my family recently is now every time you get a new medication, the pharmacist comes over and talks to you about it, like really talks to you about it. Like, do you understand this? Is that a new law that just came out?
So it is a new law that was passed that requires in the retail pharmacy setting. So any, when I say retail, it's any outpatient pharmacy where you get a prescription for your doctor and you go to get it filled at a local pharmacy,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a CVS, a Walgreens, Walmart, all the big stores. There is now a requirement that pharmacists, and it needs to be a pharmacist, must counsel patients on any new medication that they're prescribed.
That's exciting.
It is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a little more time, but at the same time, now you know exactly what you're getting. And
I would also encourage anybody, you know, I know everybody, when they go to the pharmacy, they're kind of looking to get their medication and get out.
Yeah.
But that is a great opportunity to ask questions to your pharmacist. So I would encourage everybody to take the time just for, you know, the extra 2 minutes to talk to the pharmacist when you have something new, so that, you know, you know what to expect.
So, and I understand it's probably a good idea to talk to them about when you take that medication, what other medications you might be taking with it, if they need to be taken apart from each other to avoid interactions. There's all kinds of...
Yeah, storage. So how should the medication be stored? What are good storage locations and conditions? You know, refrigerated versus non. Lots of different aspects you can learn about with the med.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest mistakes in storage that we see is people store it in their humid, wet, you know, small bathroom.
Yeah.
In the medicine cabinet. That's probably the worst place to store your medications.
Oh.
There's a lot of heat, right? You have a small bathroom that has a shower or a bathtub and it gets all humid in there. You know, if you get water on the mirror, that's not a great place to store your medications. Water actually breaks down drugs, makes them potentially less effective.
Right.
So what a lot of people would recommend is storing your meds in a secure location, right? If you have grandkids or children that are younger, obviously you don't want them to inadvertently get into medications.
Right.
So you want it to be in a location that's secure.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people put them in a kitchen cabinet, actually. So the kitchen cabinet, a higher shelf that, you know, obviously you can reach yourself,
right,
is actually a good location to store medications. With the reason being that it's not subject to all that humidity and heat that you would get in a small bathroom.
Interesting.
And you also want to, you know, they're your medications, so you want to protect them. You don't want somebody who's not taking your medications to accidentally have access, like the grandkids. You know, you never know who might be in your house. So it's important to keep them safe and away from other people and protect your medications. And your pets too. Keep them away from your pets and animals as well.
And when you're done with medications, should you just flush them down the toilet?
So that's another.
Yeah, no.
No. You got your pharmacist in here shaking their heads. We're getting smarter. What I mean by that is over time we learn that sometimes the things that we've done in the past doesn't mean it's the right thing to do now. Pharmacists, healthcare providers used to tell everybody to flush their medications down the toilet, right, when you're done, to keep them out of the reach of others, or just throw them in the trash. More and more, you know, we realize that has an environmental impact, and also not throwing them away or just keeping them in your medicine cabinet as well is not a good solution either, because then, to Catherine's point, the longer you keep a medication that you're not using in your medicine cabinet, the longer you have for somebody to divert that medication or get that medication and use it for its non-intended purpose. So when it comes to disposing of your medications, I think we've all, you know, heard about the opioid epidemic in the U.S., right? We use the majority of opioids in the world. So despite only being, around 400 million in terms of our total population, we use a, you know, staggering amount of opioids compared to the rest of the world. One of the things that we can do to help combat that is, you know, when somebody has a minor procedure or they have a opioid. So when I say opioid, things like Norco, which is hydrocodone, oxycodone, you know, the standard morphine or fentanyl type products, when you're done with those, the key is to dispose of them appropriately so that they can't fall into the wrong hands. And so more and more what you're seeing in communities is medication kiosks. So a lot of pharmacies will have a disposal location within the pharmacy where you can take them back to and throw them away and then they get destroyed in a way where they're not subject to getting into the environment or diversion for improper use.
And you can also go to your local waste management. I don't know if you have the website. I think the website's on our website.
Well, actually, here in Kendall County, you can go to Fox Metro, which is our water treatment plant. They have a disposal container there, and Kendall County Sheriff's Office. So those are our two locations where you can dispose of medication correctly.
Yes.
Right.
The other, this will be maybe hard to search from a podcast, but the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy. So NABP.
Okay.
National Association of Boards of Pharmacy has a pretty comprehensive site. So if you go onto their website, they will actually have a drug disposal search box.
Oh, nice.
That you basically can put it in there and you can put in your zip code and it will give you the locations near you where you can dispose of drug. The other thing that's nice about that site is it actually has where or what types of things you can dispose of, whether or not they take sharps, whether or not they take Schedule II narcotics like opioids or not.
Okay. And so how do you know if it's Schedule II narcotics?
So that would be
a good question.
That's a really good question. And I think that would be, you know, that would be one where you'd have to talk to probably your pharmacist or others when you're disposing of it, unfortunately. But the things that are they're Schedule II that are common are typically things like Norco, so the hydrocodone, morphine, fentanyl. So they're the more potent pain medications.
The oxycodones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Methadone.
Yep. Methadone would be another one. But if you're ever wondering, you know, you can always ask your pharmacist or others when you're going to go dispose of it. They would be able to assist you as well.
Okay.
But like you said, the sheriff's department or a lot of police departments at certain points, they'll take them back too.
Okay. But so far, pharmacy's not buying them back.
No, not yet. No, legally, we're not able to take them back. They could do a refund type process, but legally, we're unable to take them back. And I know that seems like a pretty big waste. And, you know, to some degree, we agree with that. The problem is, you know, making sure the drugs have the integrity that they need to. We talked about storage.
Right.
You know, we don't know if somebody stored the drug in their dashboard or their glove box in the middle of August.
Right.
And so we have to ensure that medications have the integrity that they should. But what I can say is there is actually legislation in Illinois right now that's being proposed that would allow for some reuse for underserved populations potentially.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So they would allow some take back and use of some medications.
Okay.
I don't believe the financial aspect in terms of getting credit back,
mm-hmm.
but at least then keeping them out of the environment and also, you know, not wasting resources.
Right. Because a lot of times people are prescribed one and they take it for a week, but they got 30 days and it wasn't the right medication. And so.
Right. And that's another thing patients can ask their providers as well. I get a lot of questions about, well, they just increased my dose. Can I half the tablets I have already or decrease my dose? And we have my tablet. A lot of times you can, but that's a question you can ask the pharmacist and make sure it's okay with your provider. But a lot of times, if you're switching a med completely, it's best to just discard or waste the old medication. Unfortunately, people don't like to waste, but get rid of it so it's out of your house. You don't take it on accident
mm-hmm.
and have duplicate medication.
That's actually, you know, when we see people admitted to the hospital, it's not uncommon for them to bring in medications that they aren't on anymore. And so we know that in the community, people keep medications that have been stopped. The issue is, you know, when you have medications that you're no longer on and you keep them in your medicine cabinet, the risk of you making a mistake and taking the wrong medication, the wrong dose, increases. And
right.
So that's why what we'd recommend is, you know, when you have your medications, the ones that are in that special storage location, only have the ones that you are actively taking in there. You know, you can have another side space that you store medications that have been stopped, but and you intend to dispose of appropriately at some point, but don't mix them together. Don't have them in the same location just because of the risk for a mistake.
Right. So why aren't people taking medications? What was it? 50% don't take
right.
them as prescribed?
So a lot of times people say they don't think the medication's working. For a chronic disease, a lot of times you're living with that disease every day. Your blood pressure, you might feel good one day, feel bad the next day. So a lot of times they feel good, so they don't think they need to take it anymore, or they don't feel sick because it's a chronic disease. You might not feel sick all the time.
Right.
It's not like a cold or an infection or you get a fever and things like that. So that's one of the reasons why. Another big one, they don't communicate with their doctor. They haven't seen a doctor in years.
No, I haven't. I've never heard that story.
Or they run out of their refills. And that could be also that communication, lack of communication with their provider. There's only so much the pharmacy can do to get refills for you. It's really up to you to reach out to your doctor and make sure you have your medication. What else? They don't know when or how to take the medication, so they're taking it correctly. Maybe some of your medication sounds similar, looks similar, and mm-hmm. you might get them mixed up. And so that might be a reason. The side effects, that's a big reason too. They can't deal with the side effects, so they just stop without telling their provider.
Instead of switching to maybe a different medication
exactly.
that works better for their body system.
Exactly. And then the biggest probably one or one of the biggest one is they can't afford their medication.
Yeah.
So that's a big problem in our country, I feel.
Well, I mean, medication just seems to be astronomical, the cost of it going up and up and up. I know here at the senior center, we do Medicare help counseling. The price of insulin, for example, like the KwikPen is just gone up, I want to say, 100% at least in the last 8 years. And if you have to take four of those a month, you know, you're looking at $400 a month with Medicare, $100 a month even sometimes.
Exactly.
So
diabetes and insulin, it gets very expensive. And a lot of times patients can't afford it and they are afraid to tell their doctor that they weren't able to pick up their medication because of cost issues.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important, like we mentioned before, to reach out, make sure you can get something to try to prevent you from coming to the hospital.
And I know, I think I heard that insulin, actual insulin, is a lot cheaper than the KwikPen. Maybe not mm-hmm. as convenient, but
there are certain insulins that are lower cost. Some, like the pens, are more expensive. Some of the newer insulins are more expensive. But there are somewhat affordable options out there. And that's why you have to really be an advocate for yourself and reach out to your provider.
Insulin's a little bit of a unique topic, too, in terms of, I know there's been a lot of discussion about the pricing practices of manufacturers associated with insulin.
Yeah.
The increases that have been seen with insulin are outpacing many other drugs.
Okay.
And so it's actually caught the attention of legislators.
Good.
So there is discussion as well of looking at, you know, how insulin is priced. Most of the drugs that are on the market for insulin right now are decade old at least. So there's really not a good explanation for why the prices have increased so astronomically.
Right.
That's a little bit beyond the scope probably of this podcast, but it's important that it's a major barrier to why people can't take sometimes medications for their chronic
condition. I have people that come in and talk to me and they're like, well, listen, I'm just doing a half dose, but don't tell my doctor, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
and I'm not going to, and right. I think it'll be fine. I feel fine.
Exactly.
I think you just highlighted one of the key things though, in terms of Catherine's messaging, is communication. I'm going to cut my dose in half, but don't tell my doctor.
Right.
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 That's one of the issues, right? Your doctor is your advocate. They want to improve your health. Your pharmacist is the same. Your pharmacist wants the medications that you get to improve your chronic condition, right? To keep you out of the hospital,
right.
to increase your life expectancy, to do all those things.
And quality of life.
Yeah.
I mean, quality of life is a
Absolutely.
Big thing.
And so I think the key is, you know, what can help with all the medication misadventures, right? That's what they've been called when people don't take their medications correctly and they don't get the benefit that they're supposed to, or they have adverse effects, medication misadventures. I think the key is open communication with your healthcare team. if your doctor questions why you won't take a medication in a certain way, and you're saying it's because I can't afford it, or I've got side effects, or whatever reason, and they're not willing to work with you on an effective solution, my recommendation would be to find an alternative provider that will work with you.
Right.
That should be a question that, or a discussion that you should be able to have openly with your doctor,
right,
or your nurse practitioner, or a physician assistant. Right. You should be able to have that conversation openly to get the benefit from the medication.
Right.
So I would encourage everybody to talk to your pharmacist, talk to your doctor, your provider, to come up with a plan that works for you, both from, treating your disease state, side effects, and affordability. You know, if you're choosing between medication and food, that's not a good choice to have to make.
Right. And that's, you can come here to the senior center. We'll help you with the benefit applications that are available. And then, of course, if you're not our age of folks, 60 and older, then there's services out in the community. I know Rush Copley, I think, helps people that are in the hospital apply for services before they leave a lot of times. So,
yes.
Yeah. So there's ways to do it. And there's also something I know I refer a lot of people to, that if the medication isn't covered under Medicare, because that happens sometimes where Medicare says, hey, glad it's working for you, but it's not one of the drugs that this is covered under this disease. So GoodRx is a website that we send a lot of people to. Where else can people go to get some help?
So I think, part of it is also knowing what options you have.
Knowing your insurance plan, which isn't easy a lot of the time.
No.
And unfortunately, sometimes you don't know until you reach the pharmacy and they tell you it's not covered. So that too, if you can know ahead of time, then you'll be ahead of the game. But a lot of times when you get to the pharmacy and they say it's not covered, that's a big barrier.
Yeah,
it can add a couple days on where you're out of your meds, you don't have anything. And that's when you really should reach out to the doctor's office and say, the insurance doesn't, right. I can't get this medication for another week or so, because there's only so much at the pharmacy they can do.
I think other things, if it is the right medication, it's one you have to be on and you're having trouble affording it, there are patient assistance programs that are out there for commercial insurance. Unfortunately, Medicare and Medicaid doesn't count for that, unfortunately. But there are copay cards, drug savings cards that are out there, the GoodRx, you mentioned, as well as one of the other things that people don't realize is a lot of the manufacturers have assistance programs.
Yeah.
So, a lot of them take you have to meet certain criteria in terms of income and some other things, but there are programs where you can get a reduced rate for the year for your medication for your chronic condition.
That's great. So at least, there's something out there for people to help. And then there's also, it seems like there's a lot of medications that treat the same disease. So there's options.
So that's when, if one medication's not covered, then you need to get back together with your doctor, nurse practitioner, and find out if there's an alternative medication that is covered.
One of the other things that's complicating this and making it harder too is now insurance companies more and more are utilizing prior authorization process. So a prior authorization is, you have to get special approval from the insurance company to prescribe or use that medication in a patient.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, what drugs require prior authorization? Usually they're expensive drugs, or sometimes they're drugs that have, significant side effects. And they want to make sure that everybody's aware of, some of the risks. But what it is it's paperwork that your doctor or your physician's office has to submit, and your pharmacy has to submit to the insurance company to show that you need this medication that costs more. It might be that you failed some of the cheaper alternatives.
Right.
It might be that you've had side effects with some of those alternatives as well.
I know some people are allergic to some generics because of how they're composed.
Mm-hmm. And so in that scenario, hopefully there's an alternative generic maybe that, for instance, doesn't have one of the red dyes in it. Or if we know what the component of that medication is, usually, hopefully, not always, there's an alternative generic that instead of being red is white or yellow. And so we can avoid those dyes that might cause the trouble. If it's one of the, you know, the sugars or those kind of things in there, the other excipients, it can be harder to know, you know, what's causing the reaction. But yeah, that would be another example where maybe a brand product versus the generic might be an option as well.
Yeah.
But they would probably require documentation and prior authorization to do that.
And that's outside of Medicare now too, huh? Yeah. Very interesting. So, you know, side effects, we've talked about that a couple times. So let's talk about that before we end our podcast today. What is the best way to manage side effects?
I think, you know, I'm gonna sound like a broken record. I think it's that open communication with your team, you know, your healthcare team, your pharmacist, your physicians, your other providers, you know, letting them know that you're not tolerating the medication and what the side effects are. For a chronic disease, the worst thing you can do is to just stop taking the med to avoid the side effect. Your healthcare team assumes you're on the medication and you're getting the benefit and you're not.
Right.
We'll just say blood pressure. They think you're taking a blood pressure medication at, you know, X dose or 10 milligram dose.
And that's all based on numbers, like actual data that they get from the test that they do as to what dose they're going to give you, right? Okay.
And so what they'll do, right, then you come into your doctor's office and they have a goal blood pressure for you based on your conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And they check your blood pressure and it's still elevated. So they'll increase the dose of the same medication.
Well, that's just the white coat syndrome.
I'm teasing. And so then you're going to get a bigger dose of a medication that you don't tolerate.
Right.
So that doesn't,
which
that doesn't
can lead to more side effects.
Correct.
Right.
More side effects, or you're just not taking it.
And so just by saying, hey, you know, I wasn't taking that medication because it made me feel whatever, so I stopped taking it. Then they can say, oh, well, you know what? There's a different medication that the other people had those same side effects and then they took this and
exactly.
It was fine.
And another important thing on the pharmacist side is we should be telling you what side effects to expect.
Okay.
And how to manage those. So if you're on a new blood pressure medication, you're going to feel dizzy and tired at first. So usually I say, you know, be careful. It might make you feel dizzy. Be careful when you stand up. So there's other ways you can manage your side effects as well. The opioids cause constipation.
Yeah.
So you would need to take a laxative stool softener while you're on those if you experience that. Nausea, sometimes you can get rid of that by taking it with food. So there's other ways you can manage your side effects first before you go and give up on them. But
mm-hmm.
That's a conversation you can have with your pharmacist.
But what are like some serious side effects that people have? You're like, absolutely stop taking it. What would that be?
I mean, allergic type reactions.
Okay.
So, you know, with antibiotics, which really aren't for, you know, chronic conditions, when you develop rashes or significant, you know, trouble breathing with medications, those kind of things, obviously that's a never again type
yeah.
medication. Sometimes you can have complications, you know, with kidneys. So you can have decreases in your renal function.
Okay.
So that's how well your kidneys are working associated with meds. Those would be times when we definitely want to look for alternatives. Meds for cholesterol can cause some liver damage. So
okay.
That's all monitored for very closely.
Mm-hmm.
But if they see that, they might choose an alternative medication.
And that's why follow-up appointments with your doctor are important, because that's when they can do the lab work to check for those other major side effects like the liver and kidney problems that can arise from taking certain medications. So that's why those follow-up appointments are very important as well. So just don't think, okay, I'm on this med now. I'm all good, right? I don't
one
have to
and
see
done.
You. Right. I don't have to see you anymore for a while.
I got it. I understand. Chronic condition. I'm just going to go get it taken care of, done.
And the you know, the good or the bad thing is what makes it hard, too, is you get all the labs done and you spend all the time and, oh, everything's great. And
yeah.
You're like, well, why did I do that? The key is really, you know, it's to monitor and detect a problem early.
Right.
The liver, you know, we'll use the liver and kidney damage again. You want to catch that early on, because then when you stop the drug, no problem,
right?
If the doctor has to switch or choose something else, no real harm. If you keep taking the medication and it's constantly, you know, kind of causing some harm to your liver, you can progress to worse conditions like liver failure or, you know, get more significant liver damage. So again, that's why that open, you know, we kind of have a theme here, open communication with your healthcare team.
Right.
To come up with a plan that works for you and reaches the goals, you know, for your condition.
Right. And I think that's a big takeaway too, is this, you know, so often for a long time, doctors were put on this pedestal and whatever the doctor said, you just listened, you know, and there wasn't a real talking back and forth discussion about everything. You took it all in, you listened and you just go and you went and did it. But now there's a lot more of opportunity for discussion. That way you can internalize what you're learning and really be able to take it home. I know
that's a good point. And another thing you could do, because a lot of times doctors, they're short on time these days as well. Write down a list of things you need to go over with them, the side effects you've been experiencing. So when you go to your appointment, you don't forget. You don't walk out and say, oh, shoot, I forgot to tell my doctor this.
Right. And it was one of the most important things.
Yeah, you should almost treat it, you know, to Catherine's point, like you're going to a business meeting, right? You wouldn't go into a business meeting without having a plan, right?
Well,
you really should. You should, right?
Yeah.
To be successful.
To be successful. Yeah, yes. There you go.
So do the same thing with your doctor. You know, have a plan for what you want to ask and what you want to get accomplished. Doctors are increasingly under, you know, time constraints and pressure because of insurance companies and because of lots of other reasons.
Right.
But that being said, if you have your questions and it's organized and it's ready to go, again, more often than not, they will sit with you and go through those questions that you have.
Okay.
If they don't, again, I would encourage you to find another provider. If they're not willing to answer your questions, I think you need to find another doctor.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, respect for doctors, you know, that plays into it a lot. And, you know, I agree. I kind of grew up with a doctor being a position of reverence is probably too high, but, you know, of respect.
Yeah.
I think you can still ask all these questions and work together on a plan that works for you while still respecting the physician and their position, right?
Right.
Because it's an open conversation. It's not a, why did you do this? It's
no.
A, hey, doc, I'm experiencing this, this, and this. I need help in mitigating or relieving those side effects. Can you help me to, you know, come up with a plan that works?
Right.
So again, you can do it in the right way so it's respectful and you respect their position, but also get what you need.
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask questions. It should be an open dialogue. It should always be an open dialogue. And I like to also recommend people bring a friend with them if
yes.
they can. Mm-hmm. Bring a family member. The more ears you have in the appointment, the more you'll remember what the doctor said. So if you have that person that you can bring with you, that can also be an extra benefit.
Definitely. Well, anything you'd like to add before we end our conversation today?
The only other thing is I think, you know, in the unfortunate situations where you do get admitted to the hospital, what I recommend is for all your medications is to have a medication list that you have in your wallet or in your purse. That you can bring in. And then that way, when people get admitted to the hospital, you know, hospitals have to do a lot of detective work to figure out what people are on at home and what they're taking and how they're taking it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a list that has all that information on it, when you get admitted, it makes it much more likely that the hospital is going to get everything right that first time when you come into the hospital and we know what you're on and we can make a great therapy plan, you know, drug therapy plan for you in the hospital.
Right.
When we don't have that, we're often trying to collect pieces of information from different resources and trying to make sure we do the right thing in terms of medications for you. So the other thing is when you have a bunch of meds, have that list of medications that you take and how you take them so that we can make sure we do the right thing for you when you come into the hospital.
And keep it current.
Yep. Exactly.
Keep it current.
Yeah. And you could put it on your phone now too. You can make a list on your phone, put it in your wallet. So just keep it with you at all times.
Well, good. Well, thank you to Chris Crank and Catherine Madden from the pharmacy department over at Rush Copley Medical Center. This has been OSC's Conversations, and we'll be talking again soon. Thank you.